My brother keeps a human head in his closet. I hope I don't end up that way.
This thing, it's gonna follow you. Somebody gave it to me, and I passed it to you. It could look like someone you know, or it could be a stranger in a crowd. It could look like anyone.
Help! Santa Claus only brings presents to them that's been good all year. To the ones that ain't done nothing naughty. All the other ones. All the naughty ones. He punishes. You see Santa Claus tonight, you better run, boy. You better run for your life.
Bring me one of those chickens.
You got money to pay for it?
You paid for it.
No, but we're the king's men. So, you got money?
Not a penny. I'll still take that chicken.
You don't seem to understand the situation.
I understand that if any more words come pouring out your mouth, I'm going to have to eat every chicken in this room.
You lived your life for the king. You're gonna die for some chickens.
Someone is.
The symbol is associated with a pagan deity named Bagul. He consumes the souls of human children. Early Christians believed that Bagul actually lived in the images themselves and that they were gateways into his realm.
I am seriously positive these were not here. How would we have, just made a campsite in between three piles of rocks just by coincidence?
You don't think this is strange?
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for discussion of horror, film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I'm one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the US of A, and with me in the state of Michigan.
Hello, this is Dracula.
Not really. Eric, this is Eric.
Eric, how's it going?
I'm doing well.
Excellent. And in the state of New York?
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how's it going?
I'm fine, Phil. How are you?
Doing all right. Eric, he has a pretty good Hungarian or Romanian accent, depending on your perspective.
That was my generic Dracula.
It worked. It was good. It has nothing to do with tonight's topic. But
no, not at all, actually.
Yeah.
Anybody too excited. Oh, they're doing Dracula. No, we're not.
No, we're not doing Dracula. Sorry, folks.
I know some people, us doing Dracula might be their fantasy to have us do Dracula, but no, that's not coming true tonight.
They might even want us to talk about the movie.
This is old school, so it's just the three of us tonight. Abe wasn't able to get to see the picture, and Chrissy was supposed to join us, but it appears she may have technical problems, so it appears she may not be able to join us. But old school is always okay. And for new listeners, Dark Discussions Podcast is a podcast that discusses weekly a film and critiques and reviews it. So genres would include horror, sci-fi, fantasy, thrillers, techno thrillers, mysteries, grindhouse, art house, cult films, midnight movies, and things of that nature, where we try to talk intelligently about a genre that deserves intelligence. We do have an email, darkdiscussions@aol.com, where you can email us and give us your feedback. We still have an email from Amy, who we will probably get to next week because we don't have it up tonight. But look for that. And anyone else, please email us. And then we also have a Facebook group, Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group, where a lot of things are being discussed recently, including some new shock movie that Eric put up, having some woman in the
bikini. It's not a movie.
Oh, it's not. What is it?
It's a game.
Oh, a video game?
Yes.
Oh, Xbox?
It's called, it'll be on the Xbox. It's called Maneater, and you play the part of the shark.
Ooh, that sounds cool. So people can go there and read all about that on the Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group, and there's various other things going on. Still talking about Harley Quinn film, Sonic the Hedgehog, horror films as well, not just superhero stuff and video game films, but basically genre stuff. A lot of good discussions going on there. Eric, we do have a website or something?
Yes, we do. You can find it at www.darkdiscussions.com. When you go there, you will find a bunch of different stuff on the front right-hand side. You will see links to Friends of the Podcast, so you can check all those out. Up at the top of the page, we have links to an articles section, which hasn't had anything new in a long time. Maybe I'll write something soon. But it has articles by myself as well as others. We also have an audio section where you can find every single episode of Dark Discussions available to download for free, as well as any of the spinoff podcasts that we've done. So you can check that out. And then front and center on the front page of darkdiscussions.com is a link to our Patreon account. Patreon is a service that lets you financially contribute to your online artists like us. Producing this podcast is not free. We have to pay for things like server hosting, going to see movies, replacing equipment, and so on and so forth. So if you'd like to help us offset the cost of producing the show, you can donate via Patreon. For every $5 a month that you care to contribute to the cause, you'll have the opportunity to submit a topic for us to possibly cover on the show. We take all the submissions from our patrons and draw them on a quarterly basis randomly. So for more information on that, follow the link on the front page of darkdiscussions.com or go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions.
And what was our last one that we pulled?
Dig two graves.
Yeah.
So as occasionally happens when we do this, we have a running joke that any time that Phil rents a film or buys a film, it then suddenly becomes available for free the next day. So every now and then what happens is sort of the reverse of that was we pick out a winner on our Patreon thing and then suddenly it disappears off of most of the subscription services. It is not exactly an easy film to get to. So we will get to it, but I think it's only iTunes that's carrying it right now.
I believe that's correct. Yeah, and I think you can get it maybe on disc too, but obviously most of us are looking to just rent it for like $2.99 or something, but we'll figure it out we're looking weekly to see when it starts popping up everywhere. So people who don't have iTunes that are part of this podcast will be able to watch the film as well. So keep that in mind. So Dig Two Graves, a film coming up sooner or later starring Ted Levine, as a matter of fact. So that
be a great big fat person.
yes, exactly. That Ted Levine. And it's actually getting got pretty good reviews, and I think it's a 2017 film, so it's a fairly new one actually. Don't know who the Patreon person that chose it. I was on
then again, Dead Man got a lot of good reviews and none of us liked it.
That's such a good point. Yeah, really valid.
So, by the way, that was a film recommended by Chris, or requested, I'm assuming recommended. I don't think he said, let's get these guys to watch a shitty film, by Chris Genro, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, he was pretty bad.
I don't know.
And every now and then there are films that other people love that we as a group don't like, and there's Villains, I think, was an example of that last week. Where I wouldn't say we didn't dislike it, but we were not as enamored of it as other people have been. And there's other times we got a movie like Come Back to Me that the reviews haven't been great, but we loved it. It's strange because we do have very different tastes and styles and whatnot, but every now and then it does kind of happen. So we will see.
We've had a lot, a good 50-50 that we either all love it or just a handful like it. But then there's also been a couple of duds as well. But we
disagree with what the consensus has been. That's the one that I find.
Yeah, the critics.
When all five of us have brilliant. Disagree with critics and or crowds. You know, I understand when the critics and crowds are split, but when the critics and crowds are in one direction. And we kind of go the other way. So, I don't know. Because, Dead Man is a controversial film. It is a split film. The idea that all five of us ended up on the negative sign was a weird flip of the coin. So we'll see what happens with this film. And I'm curious to see, by the way, speaking of critical consensus, I'm really curious to see what we think of tonight's film.
Yes. And I think we're pretty close to discussing that. We'll do some house cleaning, what we've been watching, news or anything else at the end of the episode before we give our final thoughts. But before we do any of that, I guess we can discuss our topic tonight. So, Eric, what are we going to discuss tonight?
Tonight, we are going to discuss the movie currently in theaters, inspired by the television show from the 70s, Fantasy Island.
I hope you're ready.
There is an elevator. In the elevator, you press the button to the floor with no name. Behind those doors, there's a life you always dreamt of.
It's here. This weekend, you will be our guest.
Here, anything and everything is possible.
No service. It's not everything is possible.
Good evening. I'm Mr. Rurik. Let me officially welcome you to Fantasy Island.
Fantasy Island!
I'm curious how this all works.
What if your fantasy involves a person from your life?
Holograms, like Tupac.
What if it's somebody who died?
Tupac.
So, what's your fantasy?
Revenge on a childhood bully.
Your life is about to change.
I hope you're ready.
That is a really good hologram.
There is only one fantasy per guest. And you must see your fantasy through.
It brought her back to life.
No matter what.
Oh my God. That's really her. Rourke, this is not what I meant.
What the hell is this place?
People die here.
The island's twisting what we asked for.
We weren't brought here to have our own fantasies.
I want it. I got it. I want it.
We were brought here to be a part of
someone else. I got it. I want it. I got it.
I'm your friend.
I've always wanted to hear you say that.
That's right. Fantasy Island, directed by Jeff Wadlow, who is a usual Blumhouse director. He directed such films as Truth or Dare, and this is his follow-up to that, both Blumhouse films. He's actually from Dartmouth College. How about that? New Hampshire. There you go. Then the stars of the film are probably Michael Pena and Maggie Q, and Michael Rooker are probably the most famous folk. There's a few others there that television stars and stuff like that.
I'd heard of Lucy Hale before.
Oh, you have? Okay. Yeah. And so those are.
Oh, Ken, not Ken Jeong. Who's the. Who's the small Asian actor who.
Oh, yeah. He was on that show. On
he was
HBO,
on Silicon Valley.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Jimmy Yang.
That's it.
Yeah, and then Austin Stowell, Portia, Doubleday, among others.
Kim Coates.
Kim Coates?
Oh, yeah, Kim Coates from Sons of Anarchy.
Kim Coates.
Tiggy.
What did they play in this movie?
His character name is apparently Doubleface.
Oh, yeah, Kim Coates. Yeah, he was at ScareCon. Yeah, all right. I mean, Scare's a Care. Yeah, well, I know who you're talking about. From the one that started dating the transsexual in Sons of Anarchy.
Spoiler warning, but yes, that's it.
Well, the show's a few years old.
You date one transsexual, and then that's just how everyone refers to you.
Well, his character, anyway. Oh, and he's Canadian, too, by the way, Kim Coates. Well, so,
that he should be held against him.
This is true. So, you know, not a huge cast in name. Michael Peña and Michael Rooker have had a pretty good career as character actors. And Maggie Q has been a pretty good character actor in the States, though. She's done a lot of films in Hong Kong and has made a fortune over there.
Maggie Q, who, by the way, it doesn't seem to be aging at all. What the hell?
No, not at all. Not at all. And I found out that she only calls herself Maggie Q because the Chinese couldn't say her last name, Quigley. They just couldn't pronounce it. So she just says, just call me Maggie Q. And so that's where the name comes from. Yeah, it is. So the film, as Mike said, or I should say Eric said, is based off of a Fantasy Island television show that ran for many years back in the 70s. And it was back-to-back with Love Boat. And it was a huge hit starring Ricardo Montalbán. And had a lot of big television and semi-famous movie actors come on, or actresses come on and do guest stars, because it was a guest star show. So every week there was different.
Pretty much the formula for both of those shows.
Yeah, Love Boat. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
And on occasion, a guest would walk off of one show and walk onto the other.
There you go. So we'll discuss what the show is based on and the idea, and then we'll go into the movie. But before we do all that, we will give ourselves our own opinion of this film and theater experience and how we heard about it and all this other stuff. So I guess we can start with you, Eric.
Well, I forget how I became aware of this initially. But I was intrigued by the concept of kind of doing this with a horror twist. So I was willing to go give it a shot. It's currently getting a 9% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. I certainly think it's much better than that would indicate. Is it a masterpiece? No, it's not. But I think it's decent entertainment. I thought there were some good things in this movie. For me, it ran a little long. They could have shaved 20-30 minutes out of it to improve it, in my opinion. And I also think the plot took one too many twists. But I wasn't bored. I thought it was fairly entertaining, if a bit silly. Maybe don't rush out to the theater to see it, but rent it sometime.
All right, very well. Mike, what about yourself?
What Eric said, except I was bored at the end, because I did think it went one twist too many, and that, like, so I found that, and I've said this several times on the last week to various people, but the first hour or so mm-hmm. of the film really does follow the format of the TV show.
Okay. I never watched the show, so I don't know.
All right. Well, we'll have to explain.
Mike's right. Mike is right. Yeah, Mike's right.
And then they get to a point in the film where there is a twist or a turn or a thing happens, whatever you want to call it. And all the stories, so you have four separate storylines building up momentum. And they're about to reach their resolution when this twist hits.
Right.
And it takes all the air out of these four separate stories that are all about to hit their climax,
right.
or you think have just passed their climax. Uh-huh. A lot of climaxing going on in this film.
especially with the two brothers.
It's like, right, so you're about to climax, and then the phone rings, right? That's the problem. And then it just drags it out even longer to get back to where they left you hanging before.
Mm-hmm.
Only to give you what I felt was a thoroughly unearned bullshit twist at the end. And that really turned me off.
I know that kind of thing upsets you generally more than it upsets me, but I hear where you're coming from.
Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that I dislike the film. I liked the film more than I didn't. But this went from being, oh, hey, this is pretty good, to being, well, yeah, okay, I kind of enjoyed it. It would have been a more solid recommend if it wasn't for the last 30 minutes, and especially not for the way they decide to tie together the story at the end. And we'll talk about that in a little more detail.
Right. Mike and I are basically on the same.
Very good. Yeah, very good. Yeah, for me, I'm pretty close to all you guys. I agree with Eric that it was a little too long. I mean, they could have it's like an hour and 40-something, 45 or whatever.
It's 2 hour running time, isn't it?
Oh, it's even closer to two, yeah, which was kind of surprising for a horror film. But 109 minutes. So close to, you're right, so it's like 150 minutes or so. So the problem with it is that since it's following the format of the television show, it's an ensemble cast, and each cast member has their own story. So the question is, can they do it in an hour? Like in the TV show, they were able to do it in an hour, and that included commercials. So here, the question is, how are they going to do it without making it feel draggy? And as Mike said, I enjoyed the what's that, Eric?
Nothing. Yeah, I was just being smartless.
Gotcha. But I have to say that the first hour, actually, which was the non-horror hour, was actually the better part, I felt. I kind of brought the nostalgia back, the characters I were interested in. Some of the stories arcs were a little better than others. But all in all, I was enjoying myself. But then the second half, where they bring back this black liquid stuff and a couple other things that came out of nowhere to kind of took the wind out of the story a little bit. And then the problem was they dragged it out a little too long during that second, or as Mike calls it, the third act. So that was unfortunate. And then the big twist, the real final twist, was kind of unfortunate as well, because that character that's involved in it, based off of how that character acted in the first hour or the first two acts, it made no sense that suddenly they became what they did in the third act, because there was no linear way to get there. Because
I believe that's what Mike was referring to when he said it was unearned.
Or yeah. Bullshit, yes.
Yeah. So that was, it was unfortunate. But all in all, I'm similar to Mike and Eric. I agree with Eric that it's way better than the 9% that it has on Rotten Tomatoes. It was still enjoyable enough. I didn't hate the film, and it was pretty solid for me. And all in all, though, I could see how it got mixed reviews, if not trashed reviews, because it's not a great film, but it's good. And I would recommend it if it came on VOD for people to definitely check it out. I don't think people would go, "Oh my God, this is horrible." I think they would say, "Yeah, that was all right."
Yeah, and I think if you are apparently there's a demarcation, like, because Eric is, as we were discussing off air a few minutes ago, Eric is a couple of years younger than we are. Phil and I are rapidly approaching colonoscopy age, and Eric is a little bit still a safe arm's length distance. And apparently that arm's length distance is enough to separate us between Fantasy Island watchers and non-Fantasy Island watchers.
Well, I remember the existence of the show. And my older brother used to watch it with my mom, but I never really, like at that age, I wasn't into like watching television shows.
Right. And that show went from 70, I think it said 77 to 83.
Yeah. So that would be 4 to 10.
Right. Where for me, for Phil and I, that would have taken us up to like 12, 13 years old. And so it would have been a little bit more in our range. One more disturbing. Now, I don't know if you're aware of this. There was a reboot, Fantasy Island, that came out.
I was not aware of that with
Malcolm McDowell that lasted as with Malcolm McDowell as Mr. Rourke and a.
I'm sorry, that concept makes me giggle.
I think it was Feivish Finkel was his assistant or one of his assistants.
Oh my.
And it definitely had a bit of a darker turn to it. So and Fantasy Island always had often a little, because it is always a story about fantasies that go in unexpected directions. And you often got those "be careful what you wish for" fantasies.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of there being a dark element to it, and on rare occasions, a horror element to it. Now, it's only as horror and dark as you could get in 1970s and early 80s
regular TV.
Network which is television.
Which is not very, you know, there was a spider or something. But they could go there. I think there was like an episode where it was like Mr. Work versus the Devil or something like that. It was one of the stories.
Oh, I would watch that.
But anyway.
My money's on Ricardo Montalban.
Here's the thing that disturbs me, is I thought about how long this was a series that was dead and buried for a long time. And it was buried for 15 years. And then they did the revival. And there was this long time between the first series and the second series. And then not long after they do the second series, they do the movie. Except it's actually been 21 years since the first revival. There's more time between the second series. Yeah, because I'm freaking old.
That's where you're
old.
Going with all this.
That's exactly where I'm going. So, yeah. Boy, that just made me... That movie was out... the other TV series was out, I think, before I met my wife, or right at the time I met my wife.
Because you're
old. And you know what's funny? Mike, the original series, way back when we were kiddos, the two leads are dead now. That's how old it is.
Yeah.
Sure is.
So are most of the guests, and the guests that are not dead are look like leather. They're all gone. In fact, probably a whole lot of the guests from the reboot series are dead too, because that was 20 years ago. Oh, God, we're old. So anyway, for the uninitiated, so Fantasy Island, you had Mr. Rourke, played by Ricardo Montalban, who, if you're a nerd, you might know better from Star Trek Wrath of Khan as Khan, right? Played Khan Noonien Singh in that. He also played the Armando, I believe, was the name of the character in the Planet of the Apes, Escape from the Planet of the Apes, and not Battle. Conquest.
Conquest. Yeah.
Right. So he was. He was. He had a. You know. Was in those. So you might know him better from that. And of course, he is a legendary. He'd been tons and tons of things in his younger years. But those are the two main things for genre fans. So he played the host of the Fantasy Island, and is never explained in the TV series how Fantasy Island works, but. Much like the Love Boat, the way the story goes is that you have three guests or sets of guests on the island, and they disembark. Hervé Villechaize, who played Nick Knack in Man with the Golden Gun, was a little person, and Peter Dinklage just did the thing, I think, on HBO, right? His like a biopic about him, but he played his.
I didn't know that.
Right, so he plays Mr. Rourke's assistant Tattoo, and so the iconic opening to the show was always a bell tower rings to signal the plane approaching, and Tattoo stops doing whatever he's doing, whatever little manservant bullshit he's doing, to go, the plane, right, and he goes and does that, And so they stand there as the guests disembark, and Mr. Rourke explains to Tattoo who each guest is and gives some ominous or intriguing tagline about their fantasy, right? So he's like the little TV guide, for those who remember TV Guide, in the show itself, telling you who these people are. Oh, here's Mr. Jones. Mr. Jones wishes for great wealth. We'll see if he get what he deserves. You know, that's...
right.
But boss...
What will happen? You'll have to see, Tato. You'll have to see.
Oh, just wait. I do remember there was one episode. I remember almost none of the actual episodes. I remember watching it almost every week, at least after.
I loved the show. It was great.
But I do remember there was, I think, one episode where Tattoo got to be the one in charge of the fantasies. I have no idea what happened. I don't know how it played out. And sometimes they did things that are wacky. Sometimes they did things that were adventurous. Usually it was like, here's an adventurous one. Here's a funny one, and here's a romantic one where and then there were A, B, and C stories. Now you got to basically take out commercials. You got 45 minutes. You got about 5 minutes of bullshit between Mr. Rourke and Tattoo, just kind of wrap around story segments. So you basically had, 12 to 15 minutes per story. Now some were longer and some were shorter. One was the A story, one was the C story, but they didn't get into a whole lot of depth and development for this. But it was like a little anthology every week, and it was where they set it up. And that is how this film really does start off. Well, except for there's a pre-credit sequence, but it starts with the plane landing. And instead of Tattoo, you have Julia is Mr. Rourke's assistant. Mr. Rourke being played by Michael Pena. You get four sets of guests coming off the plane. So because it's a movie, we get four stories instead of just three. And that sets us up and ready to go. Right. And that's plays out again, very much like the old TV series.
Yes. Now, before we get into anything else, I think we have to do a wiki arc.
Wiki.
All right. According to IMDb, this isn't even any fun. A horror adaptation of the popular 70s TV show about a magical island resort. That's it. That's the wiki.
Yeah. Let me ask you guys this. So this is billed as a horror film.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And the advertising campaign, like the poster is, it looks like Skull Island.
Right.
Right. Death is the on a scale of 1 to Exorcist, like 1 to 10, mm-hmm. Where would you put this on a horror scale?
Oh, probably around a 5.
Yeah.
Well, the second half is pretty standard 1990s slasher type weird. You know what I'm saying? It's the type of horror film you would see in the 1990s, the second half. But the first half, there's no horror at all, really.
Well, there's a little bit. There's like faux torture porn in there. And there's call-outs to horror. I don't know where I really would put it because it straddles a number of different genres because of the different story elements. And it certainly leans into a darker thing. It's like it is basically a darker episode of the TV series. So it's horror, but I don't know that horror was the right way to market the film because I think people might have been expecting like Wishmaster. And it just was not that.
Right.
And I don't know if that had anything to do with the reviews or not. I agree. Now, I also thought this director directed Truth or Dare, and Truth or Dare got also horrible reviews. Pam and I watched it later on.
And that's where Lucy Hale is known from. She was
okay. And I'm not saying I thought it was a very good movie, but as a stupid teen horror disposable film, I didn't think it was terrible. I didn't think it was worth the terrible reviews it got. And I don't think this is worth the terrible reviews it got. I think it deserves knocks. But yeah, 10% is just... Oh.
So here's an interesting little
right.
piece
yeah,
of
that's
trivia.
Right. She came from Truth or Dare. You're right, Eric.
Here's a little yeah. piece of trivia. They have modified the IMDb page since I saw the movie.
Is it now called Harley Quinn? Fantasy
well, No. The cast. I was looking at the cast after the movie and I saw it. And I saw Charlotte McKinney, and she was labeled as the character Aphrodite. And I was like, what the fuck? There was nobody named Aphrodite in this movie. What the hell are they talking about? And they've since changed it to Chastity, which was the actual name of the character in the movie. They like when they did that, they must have done this pre-release and gotten that name off a script or something. Because after I saw it in the theater, Charlotte McKinney was credited as the character Aphrodite.
And so the way you're saying it makes it sound like a blaxploitation film.
I'm just telling you what I saw.
Was it Aphrodite with an F?
No.
That's why I'm asking. No, I know that, but the way you're saying
it. You're a school teacher. Don't you know your Greek mythology?
I do, but I'm a Greek myth nerd. But you said the way you're saying Aphrodite, right, I'm saying it sounded that. Like it sounded like a Pam Grier movie.
Or maybe you're just racist.
That could be, but I think it's more the way you're saying.
I forgot, Eric. You're right that Charlotte McKinney is in it too. Yeah, that's right. She was in this film. All right, to move on from the joke about black exploitation and how Eric said the name Aphrodite. But I do understand your point. I think that came from actually not a black exploitation, but the Man of Mystery films played by Michael Myers. I would tell what those films called. Austin Powers films. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's where I think Aphrodite may have came from. But I'm not sure. Okay, so... Yeah, so this is basically an update of the television show, and then they decided to turn it into a horror spin at the end. As Mike mentioned, the horror isn't like really horrific. It's more, and like I said, it's more like a 1990s PG-13 horror, I feel.
Well, and we can get into it after the spoiler flag, but I really feel that like, I mean, almost like Mike and I are almost exactly on the same page here, because the things that they had separately for each of the guests that were all building towards a climax, some of them were getting pretty horror-ish, and they could have gone there, and it could have worked, but then they did this whole convoluted BS, and it's just like, what? None of that makes sense.
Yeah, and I got to be honest, I found, and I'll call out a few things in here, and I do know that they did reshoots on this at some point, but so many films do reshoots now. It's hard to say. I have a feeling that the ending was a lot of it was tacked on or changed because they maybe didn't test well, and they were trying to. And I like there were little things here and there that I'll mention that will come up, like the Michael Rooker storyline. I don't know where that really came from and where they went with it and why it even existed, other than Michael Rooker, you know, is friends with the producer and needed a paycheck. I have no idea, you know, why there was the Michael Rooker story in this film. It's like, how about, we wrote the character into a corner. How do we save the character? Michael Rooker comes in and saves her. Perfect! There you go. Okay, what do we do with Michael Rooker now? Jumps off a cliff. Perfect! All right, good. There we go.
Barrett Heisner, one of our Facebook members, he actually wrote this to me. He goes, I thought it was an awesome film and a perfect homage to the show. I love how they worked in the name tattoo as well. Way better than I expected. So that's his opinion. Because he asked me if he should see it. And I told him, yeah. Well, not really, because he just said, the way they worked in Tattoo.
That was literally the last thing that was done as a reveal at the end of the film. That is a total spoiler.
No, he just said how they worked it in. We are not saying that the specifics.
All right.
But either way, all right. So what else do we want to talk about before we go open up to the plot and discuss plot points and individual stories and all that other stuff? I do think that the one twist they had where there was going to be this new storyline was cool, but then they went, like, I think it was you, Mike, that they went a twist or two too far, I think.
I will say that the problems with this movie are in the script. I thought all the actors in the movie were fine. I thought the production value was fine. It looked good. Yeah. So that's my opinion.
And it was only $7 million film, too. So that's a pretty small budget, but it looked fantastic, and they got a bunch of actors that could act. But go on, Mike.
Well, I was going to say, first of all, you're filming on a tropical island, so it's really hard to make that look bad. So good use of production values there. The one thing I didn't think looked good were the black water effects. I thought were kind of cheesy. And felt like
snakes,
you know,
because it doesn't look like the real black water.
I'm just saying it. Well, it just looked like CGI from about 10 years ago instead of you know.
That's fair.
2 years ago. But this is the Blumhouse model strikes again, because while this film did not do well at the box office, it still made more than its budget.
It doubled its budget.
It made 14
almost
million.
Tripled it at this point.
Okay, so it's a success. Let me ask you, as a general thing, because the most famous well, I guess the two obviously the two most iconic and famous characters from the series are Mr. Rourke and Tattoo. You know, there is a completely different assistant this time, but you do have Mr. Rourke, and he's been the one consistent in all three versions of the series. What did you think of Michael Peña as Mr. Rourke?
I thought it was fine.
For me, oh, yeah, go ahead, Eric.
He was fine. I didn't have a problem with it.
Yeah, for me, I thought he was fine. Ricardo Montalbán is dead, and even though he was iconic and even a culturally important actor and all that, so it's going to be hard to replace him. But I think Michael Peña was pretty solid. I think he was good. What about you, Mike?
Yeah, I thought he was fine. Ricardo Montalbán is an iconic actor. You're not going to replace him, and certainly not going to duplicate him. And he could do charming and suave. I don't know if he did much funny. I don't know if I ever saw. Well, no, actually, Naked Gun. Right, he was in Naked Gun.
Was he?
Yeah, he was the villain in the first Naked Gun film.
Wow, okay. I gotta watch that again.
Yes, you must. Yeah. And try to get over the fact that one of the cast members committed a double homicide.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. But Michael Peña, I don't know about anybody else. I know him best for his roles in the Ant-Man films where he plays the fast-talking ex-con. So I was really curious how they were going to do it here. And he does a good job of kind of playing it straight. He's not playing it as a comedic role, but he does have some charm. You know, I could see him working as if they decide to go with like another Fantasy Island film, I could see him working as the ongoing host.
Well, he's a good actor,
right?
Yeah,
he was in a movie called End of Watch. That is a little dark and very drama-y, but he was fantastic in that movie.
Oh, he's been fantastic in everything I've seen him in. What's that film that won the Academy Award? That beat out Brokeback Mountain, Crash. He was good in that. Mm-hmm. He was good in Devil. He's been in a lot of good stuff, and he's always been solid. But I think the thing is that technically you could say, well, why didn't I get a bigger name for that role? And technically they probably could have. But again, the role is more a supporting role, even if he's the quote unquote main character. So on the TV, you definitely want a huge name for that role because he's going to be recurring every week. But in a movie like this, I don't think it was really that necessary. So all they needed was someone that had the ability to act really good, and this guy can act really good, even if he's not like charismatic, like Ricardo Montalbán.
Well, and it's also part of the Blumhouse model, right? Which is that, I mean, if they could have gotten bigger names, but, you know, would have added another, $3 million to the budget, taking it from 7 to 10. Right. And that's not how they
easily
roll.
Yeah, I mean, they could have gotten Robert Downey Jr. and it would have been a $50 million movie.
Right. Well, I was thinking someone even more iconic in the sense that older, like they could have got like someone like Robert Redford to come in and to do it. But again, they're not Marvel, or in other words, Disney, who can just pay Robert Redford $3 to $5 million for a cameo in Captain America, or, you know, so it's or Jeff Bridges for that matter, you know, in Iron Man. So they weren't going to do that. So they had to find someone that would be much cheaper, but is still a good actor, and Peña, even if he's not a lead actor, he's always in ensemble cast where there's a lot of like A-listers in those ensemble casts, so he's fairly familiar and has worked with some big actors.
Yeah, so I'd like to, I just curious about you guys. I had seen some people didn't think he was particularly good. I thought he was fine, and I liked him.
Well, and that's the problem, Mike, that's the problem, is that everybody who's watching it that didn't like him were probably, you know, older crowds that kind of remember the TV show. That, so you're always going to compare him to Ricardo Montalbán, and you just can't do that. It's
well,
not fair.
And the other thing is that although Michael Peña was fine, I really didn't care for that character's whole backstory.
But that's a script problem, not a Mike Pena problem, you know?
Right, right. That's true. Yeah, because the backstory for the Mr. Rourke in this was never presented in the original television show. And in the original television show, he wasn't a melancholy or sad character. He was a happy and enjoyable character. So they changed it up a little bit here. And again, that's specifically, like you said, Eric, that's a script thing and not a an actor thing.
Yeah, and that is a thing that this film does, is that it basically, so between whatever, 5 or 6 seasons of the original series and then a season of a reboot, you never find anything significant out about Mr. Rourke or the island, and here they tell you everything.
Right. Right?
And so whatever mystery there was, and you could argue, because we know there's some people who only think they're still waiting after 10 seasons for The Walking Dead to tell you how the zombie virus started. You know, they.
Oh my God, is that show still on?
It's still on, coming back on Sunday.
Fuck?
Holy shit.
There's still people, and there's people who need to have everything explained. And I kind of miss the fact that they didn't leave some mystery for the audience. But that is a creative choice, and it goes back to the script, and, you know, we'll discuss it when we get to the spoilers.
Right.
So I think we're there.
Yeah, pretty close, pretty close. All right, so I guess we can throw up the spoiler, and so we'll discuss the various storylines of the quote-unquote guests of the island, and then we'll talk about everything else also, including the horror elements and the twist with the island and the twist with all the characters and all that stuff. All right, so there was 4 sets of characters we discussed, right? And the question is, did you guys feel that they were annoying or not, or caricatures, you know, stock crap, or were they well-developed when we first meet them, I guess? Or a mix. Some characters may have just been crappy and some may have been good. What did you guys think? So actually, before we even do that, let's just name who they were, right?
Go ahead.
Okay, so Gwen Olson, played by Maggie Q, is kind of like, I don't know, I forget what she was, but maybe she was a model or a businesswoman. I don't even remember. But she feels that her life is not filled because she's 40, young 40s, unmarried, it's whatnot. Then there's Melanie Cole, who is a pretty co-ed who seems like a spitfire, but may have a sad secret. And then there's 2 brothers, Brax, and who's the other brother? Is it
not Brax?
Brax Weaver and JD, yeah, that's it. Brax and JD. So Brax and JD are stepbrothers, and they decide they just want to have a party. And so that was their fantasy, whatever a party consists of, in your opinion. And then there's Patrick, who is a guy that never became a military person, and he always wanted to be, and so maybe he could experience it as a fantasy on the island. And it is told by all of us that they won contests to be here, so it wasn't like they were wealthy and they decided to just come like some of the characters in the original TV show. Now, Eric, you were going to say something. I'm sorry to do it.
No, that's fine. I was just going to say that it should be noticed that the character of Brax is homosexual in the movie. And I particularly enjoyed the fact that he was just a guy that's homosexual. He wasn't like flamey or swishy or particularly effeminate. He's just a dude that's gay. And that's not the usual thing you get from Hollywood. So I appreciated that.
Right. Yeah. And we don't even know he's gay until
he says.
Party. Yeah. Yeah. They're at the party. And then he goes, all right, I'm going for that. You know, but before that, yeah, it was not an identifying feature of the character that, unfortunately, Hollywood kind of stereotypes often. So that's an excellent point, Eric. I like that point. Yep.
What I like, what was weird with Jimmy O. Yang, who plays the part of Brax, is he plays the character Jin Yang in Silicon Valley. And that's really the only place I know him. I know he was in Crazy Rich Asians, but I haven't seen that. But the character he plays in Silicon Valley is very Chinese, and you know his broken English is a recurring thing in the show. So I really didn't know how he was going to play talking like a normal person, you know. So, but yeah, he was a very different character, and he has a lot of fun with it. It is a story point because he's basically been disowned. He's adopted, or wait, was he adopted?
No, neither of them were adopted. I think he came from the mother, and the other one came from the father, and they married together. Yeah,
that was it. Right. So he he's been disowned because he's homosexual, and their basic wish, for whatever reason, they want it all, right? And so their wish is to basically have a weekend party of fabulousness.
Right. 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 The brother we must mention has not disowned him. It's only the parents and step parents that have disowned him. So the brother is really loyal to him, and they're almost like best friends, never mind step brothers. So
right, and it's a plot point that they live together. There's some hints that, because again, you got to look, because nobody has a fantasy that doesn't need to learn a lesson in 15 minutes or less. So there's a hint that it, like, the lesson may be something like they have to learn to go their separate ways, or you know, or learn to grow up a little. There's something going on there. Like, there's going to be a fantasy there, which might be why they're on that island.
It should also probably be called out that their dynamic is very frat bro-ish.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, yeah, they're still acting like college kids rather than the middle 20s or late 20s that they really are. So they're still trying to live the no responsibility life. At least for the fantasy island. I mean, maybe on the real island, we don't learn enough to know that, you know, they have their 8-to-5 jobs, work overtime, whatever. And now that they're got this new prize, hey, let's just party it up like we did when we were 20s. But it's generally right. That's what's going on,
right? So the sense is that their lesson is going to be that they have to like grow up and be responsible, right? At least that's what I sense. That's where they were going to end up going, or that sure. life can't just be a party. Now with them as characters, these dude bros, and then you get the other, because I'm terrible with the names. The one who's regretting, you know, where she is in her life as she's going through her crisis.
That's Gwen, right?
Character. I guess. And she's right. And there may be people really upset to find out the thing she regrets is turning down a marriage proposal 5 years earlier.
That's not really the thing.
Well, exactly. We're going to find out. And so, you know, of course, the thing is, well, we're going to have to learn that, you know, you have to live with your past choices. You can't just live in the past and let regret rule your life. Right. So sure. There's the one that wants revenge on her high school bully. Right. You know, so the idea of it's going to be forgiveness. Yeah, it has to be, the lesson has to be forgiveness. And I don't know what the lesson was supposed to be for Soldier Boy.
Melanie. The Soldier Boy was, I guess, similar to Maggie Q's character, which is regretting that he didn't do, I guess, his quote-unquote dream, which was join the military. You know, his mother told him not to do it. And so he didn't, and he regretted that choice. He should have followed his quote-unquote dreams, I guess.
Right, and he became a police officer, but he basically, because of a thing that happened, he ended up on desk duty. And I was kind of waiting to find out, like, the thing that happened was, like, he shot a black person or something. I was waiting for it to go. We're going to need a bad person here, and we were alluding to something bad happening in his past. But that was when I was still early in the film thinking it was going to go more in a horror direction. But it does all end up tying together at the end.
It does. And you're right about, you know, I could see like certain groups of, I guess, progressive thinkers would have immediately been pissed about Gwen's story because she turned, you know, because no woman needs a man and doesn't need kids. What? The, you know, but again, that wasn't the point.
Doesn't mean you can't want them.
Right. And
some people it does.
Right. But either way, you know, I mean, it was something she wanted and it didn't work out. And so, I mean, that's a fair thing. It's not, you know, I don't think Hollywood was trying to say the woman should be married with kids.
No. But again, there's more to it.
The whole thing was a head fake anyway.
Yeah, it was a whole head fake anyway. You're right.
Right. So it seems like it's going to be laid out in a predictable way. And I think the storylines as they play them out, they're marginally twisty. Yep. But still, even so, the twists don't seem that hard to predict, right?
Well, I was kind of surprised about the dude bros because, I mean, that it turned out to be more like finding a genie and then the wishes don't turn out to you what you want, because I couldn't see how they would F up that. You know, 2 days of partying and whatever, and that's it. But they threw something in the fantasy that was almost, in my opinion, a do ex machina, because it's like, who the hell would have said, I want to have a party at a mansion, but let's make sure the mansion was owned by a bunch of mobsters and they're going to come and kill it. Yeah, it's just,
well, that's kind of the point of Fantasy Island. The part of it is they be careful what you wish for. And, you know, they wished for something shallow. And, you know, they got it without asking where it came from. So, oh, look, you inherited a drug dealer's mansion or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And his people are coming for revenge, you know, and so that's how that goes wrong. Melanie wants to torture her high school bully and thinks she's living it out on, like, thinks she's torturing a hologram, right? Like Tupac. And is kind of taken aback when it turns out she's really torturing somebody, and they really is got her high school bully there, and decides, oh, I can't really do this. I was not intentionally doing it, and saves her, and so that's sort of the twist there. But they end up being pursued by, what did she call him, Mr. Terror or something like that?
Dr. Torture, I think it was.
Dr. Torture, which I didn't understand, because she says, that's Dr. Torture. Like, we're supposed to know who Dr. Torture is. Like, if it had been Freddy Krueger.
No, the reason we know, Mike, is because she talked about wanting to staple his mouth shut. And when he took down his mask, his mouth was stapled shut. That's why you're supposed to know.
Oh, okay. So, anyway, right. So and he's going to chase them through the island. And, of course, they're going to have to learn to work together.
Right. So, even though we were talking about five main characters, it honestly turns into a six main character, because Sloan Madison, who is the character played by Portia Doubleday, or in other words, the bully, as Eric just said, becomes the sixth main character on the island. But you're right, they have to work together to survive from now this rogue Mr. Torture, Dr. Torture. And so will Melanie be able to forgive her tormentor and grow up, and will Sloan learn and understand that she was a shallow person, and will she no longer be, kind of thing.
Right. So these are all where we're expecting it to go. Will it go there? But, well, no. We'll get to that. Are we missing? And then the Soldier Boy. Soldier Boy ends up, you know, wandering into a group, you know, through the jungle, gets picked up by a group of soldiers, and soldiers take them back to their commanding officer, who turns out to be
his father.
His father, who died in combat 20 years earlier.
And this is where we now understand.
I kind of like that one, actually.
Now we know why his mama told him not to be in the military, because she became a widow and he lost his father because of it.
Right. Yeah. But you also know, if you've seen now any Wish Goes Bad story, and if you've seen any time travel story, we all know exactly where this is going, which is that he's going to, you know, watch his father die.
Right, right.
And if not, maybe even get him killed. So we know where this is going. Again, it doesn't mean it's actually nicely executed. There's some nice stuff in there for what is basically a 20-minute story. Everything's done kind of in shorthand, but I think it works.
Mm-hmm. Well, and really, I think all of these set-offs and payoffs for the individual people coming to the island, we're fine. It's nothing spectacular. It's nothing mind-blowing, but they're fine. And the fact that they tried to put an uber twist on all of them at the end is just like, what are you?
It's Eric. It's 2020. We demand more than fine. There has to be a twist. It has to be the greatest thing ever.
Well, fine if it's the greatest thing ever, but this isn't. It's mind-boggling. It's just like, wait, what? That doesn't even make sense.
Well, and the other problem too with that type of stuff is that everybody's expecting twists now because M. Night Shyamalan and various other folk that they have to do two twists and three twists and four twists, and that's where it's unfortunate at points.
Yeah,
I'll tell you what my actual biggest issue with the movie is, other than these dumb twist, is that at one point, actually at several different points. Because apparently you guys just said they never explained on a show what makes Fantasy Island Fantasy Island. They explained that here, and apparently the island has like a power source in the middle of it.
A giant crystal
that feeds this spring that has this black water in it. And to get to this thing, you got to go through this series of caves. Now at several different points, different characters are in these caves. And they're like these—I don't know—they're hallucinations or just like manifestations of the magic of the island or whatever. But like nothing that happened in the caves made any goddamn sense to me at all. It's just like, what is this?
I was kind of hoping Hurley would walk through.
Something.
Yeah.
I was like, what is going? Like the one girl sees herself, and then. Like, it looks like something happens, but then that turns out to be nothing, and then...
Well, when I say like, to explain
what the fuck is going on?
When I would say to explain, I don't mean to imply they explained it well, but, like, there was never... Like, there was oftentimes, and where the fantasies were always a question of... Sometimes they did fantasies that were clearly magical, and at other times it was a question of, well... Was it really a fan, or did they just hire actors, or was it, did they just arrange to have your high school sweetheart be, at the island bar in order for you to have that romance that you always wanted? So usually there was like one of the three stories that was more.
Hey, that one belongs on the Love Boat. Next show, buddy.
Love Boat was 8 o'clock. Fantasy Island.
Mike's kind of right though. Yeah, one of the stories is more real than the other two. The other two are more like. People learning a lesson, and then the third story was one where everything turns out to be real and a good ending where the couple gets together or something like that.
But what I was trying to say is that nothing that happened in the caves in this movie makes any sense.
Well,
that was my point here.
I'll tell you one thing, Eric. I thought the only point of the caves numerous times until the very, very, very end was... they were going to use that one character as a red shirt. So in other words, the one character that sees themselves, the character that sees themselves in the shadows.
Okay.
The doppelganger that they see in the shadows. I thought that character was not going to survive. And I thought, okay, this is just their way of getting rid of her. Or him. And what happens instead is that character actually becomes one of the main characters in the movie. So I don't know. I think it was just there as a red herring, maybe? I don't know. I mean, because every time they went back to the cave, I just said, all right, they're going to kill off this character. And they never did. So I don't know.
So I was actually cool with like everything that was happening in this movie up until they got into the caves and stupid weird shit with no explanation started happening. that was never explained on pretty much any level. And then the stupid twist. It's just like,
Right. So I'm sorry, I did forget. I did want to point out I did forget something, as did the writers, which is the Michael Rooker storyline.
Oh, you mean the one that just ends when he dives off a cliff?
Right. Yeah. So as the characters are going through their fantasy, at some point, most if not all of them come across Michael Rooker. Now, sometimes it's like your classic
psycho, yeah, or something, right? We think he's going to be a psycho because he's looking at everybody evilly and he has a machete.
Right, it's the kind of thing where like you go put your mind frame back in like 1981, 1982 TV and see these people walking past some palm fronds in a fantasy island kind of resort bar and going, oh man, this is going to be what a great weekend. And then we zoom in on the palm fronds and there's a guy there in camouflage with crazy eyes and you have the dun 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 music. And it fades out to, you know, your commercial for Toyota or whatever it is. That was basically how they were using Michael Rooker as this ominous presence in the background.
Right.
And so anyway, we see Melanie? Meredith?
Melania. Which character? The one that was doing the torturing of her bully?
Right. So basically,
yeah, that's Melanie. That's Melanie.
They escaped the doctor torture or whatever his name is,
yeah,
and Dr. Torture is chasing them, and they run into Michael Rooker, and Michael Rooker saves them, and it turns out Michael Rooker is actually Michael Rooker, ace reporter for the Daily Fantasy or whatever the hell
he
is.
No, he was a private eye. He was a private,
oh, private eye. Eye, right? And he was sent though to investigate the island and what are the secrets of the island that he hasn't been able to get off since? And people die here, and he's giving warnings, and here he gives them the evidence. I don't know what the fuck he did. And then he sacrifices himself to save them. And
right.
There's no real payoff to him being there at all. None.
Right. He was just a red herring, basically.
I have a feeling there was probably more to his character or his character storyline, because you could have excised him from this completely and the movie would have been pretty much the same.
Right. I'll give them one credit on that storyline, is that they cast the right actor, even if the right actor was there because he's buddies with the producers, because Michael Rooker, besides his role in Belko Experiment, when he's a nice guy, he usually plays a heavy. So when we see him, he's the perfect actor to play the heavy, you know, the bad guy. And then they twist it, and he's actually a good guy. And I did like that aspect, that he was actually a good guy. However, the character and the story made no sense and didn't even need to be in there.
Yeah. All right. So shall we get to the twisty twist? Before we get to the twisty twisty twist,
well, I want to talk about the zombies too. That one kind of pissed me off too. It's like I would have rather just had them after they kill the fantasy people, that they would have just dissolved or whatever.
Oh, you're So this is with the frat boys.
Yeah.
That's okay, right. So the frat boys, Kim Coates and them, they come in to take revenge on them for stealing their crime lord's money, and they want the money. And so they start shooting up the place, and all the girls, the hot girls and maybe some of the hot guys that they were with, they beat them to the panic room.
Right.
And so they get locked out of the panic room, and they have to face the wrath of the evil villains, and you know, how are they going to get out of this? And
the question is, were all the hot chicks, were they also made from the island, or were they real people? And that's never explained, but
I don't think it matters.
Yeah.
So anyway, there is a room full of guns, and through various machinations, they get to the room full of guns, they fight off the bad guys, and the bad guys all die, and then they come back. Right? They resurrect. Right. Like they're
sometimes they come back.
The bad guys respawn like it's a video game and you hung around there too long.
Right, but they're zombies now because they have like black eyes and
good. Oh, because that's the brothers. Water. That's the water. Yeah. The water dripping from their eyes.
Yep.
That causes the water from the gem under the island that causes the magic to happen. Which I don't understand, but all right.
It's perfectly clear, Mike. I don't understand what your problem is.
So I had that was my main problem over everything else was the zombies. It's like, oh, come on. They should have just had more bad guys instead of zombie bad guys.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
And so then we find out the what's her face?
Her.
Faith? Gwen?
Gwen. Maggie Q's character. Yeah.
Maggie Q's character.
Gwen, okay.
Right. Yeah. So we find out she gets her face. She gets to go back in time. She gets to say yes to the wedding, to the marriage proposal. And then she comes back to the present on Fantasy Island, and she's there with her husband and her, like, five-year-old daughter, which is weird because she just accepted the marriage proposal 5 years earlier, and we know from that moment she wasn't pregnant, so somehow she instantaneously gave birth to a newborn child right after that proposal. But
well,
anyway,
that type of stuff was valid for the TV show, too, how that would work.
I know. Yeah. But anyway, so she sees this little fantasy, she goes, no, this isn't right, she didn't think it was real. If she really had her fantasy, really, really, really had what she wanted. She didn't really want a husband and child. What she really, really wanted to do was undo this terrible thing in her
past. No, it was actually mistaken, Mike. It had nothing to do with not wanting a husband and child. It had to do with fixing her biggest regret.
No, I'm saying was that wasn't the thing she really wanted the most.
Right. No, it wasn't.
Oh, her biggest regret. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was
she tricked Mr. Rourke into giving her a redo on her fantasy because of the vagueness with which she phrased her fantasy, then allowed her to say, I realized I actually meant this.
Right.
Right.
And by the way, this is where we now find out Mr. Rourke's story, which is Mr. Rourke and his wife. What? You don't like this story?
I don't like this story. No, go ahead.
They come to the island. They were searching for the island, right? Sort of like Ponce de Leon looking for the...
Yeah, something like that.
Right. And they finally arrived at the
like
island.
Columbus looking for India.
And they finally arrived at the island, but his wife died. But as long as he continued to serve the island, he could still have his wife.
Right.
And so he's there to serve.
Who's BTW, really ill. I think she has cancer and kind of miserable and in pain the entire time. But whatever, at least she's there.
Right. Now, I figured out who his – when they said his wife, because we've seen Julia or whatever her name was, the assistant, their version of Tattoo, like seeming a little sick. So I was like, oh, okay, so it's his wife and he's basically there to keep her alive. And she just, I guess, dies every week and comes back for the next episode. So there's a little bit of a curse, but that's so now we know his story and why he's doing what he's doing, even though he's doing some what seems to be kind of shitty things later in the film. And that I suspect was always a part of the story. I don't think that was something that was like reshot or rewritten.
No, I don't either.
So anyway, so she really, really wants to fix her regret. And we find out her regret is that there was a person in an apartment who died that she could have saved. Right? They died in a fire.
Or she thinks she could have saved.
Or she thinks she could have saved. So she goes back to the fire and, oh my God, who's the cop standing outside as the fire burns?
Patrick, yeah, exactly.
It was Patrick. And as she's running into the burning building, wouldn't you know, guess who she brushes past?
Brax.
Indeed. Brax and JD are frat boys. Yeah. Oh, the fantasies are starting to converge together. So they were living in that apartment building. And she rushes in and then, unfortunately, she succumbs to the smoke. She couldn't save the person she tried to save.
Right, she would have died too had she attempted. Is basically what she's learning.
Right,
because she gets smothered by the smoke, but one of the co-vacationers or fantasy folk save her from the fire.
It was Julia, wasn't it?
Yeah, oh yeah, you're right. It was Julia, the Mr. Rourke's wife, who mm-hmm. saves her and pulls her out of the fantasy because she was going to die. In other words, if she had actually gone back and tried to save the man back to 10 years ago, whenever it was,
she would have died.
But now she's seeing people that were there the whole time back 5 or 10 years ago are her co-Fantasy Island folk, like the Patrick and Brax and JD and so forth. Yeah.
Right. So we find out now, so the thing that caused Patrick to be stuck behind a desk apparently is letting someone die in a fire.
Yeah, he didn't do his duty. He chickened out to go in and try to save the person.
Although I don't know if that actually works that way.
It doesn't, but whatever.
Yeah, but whatever.
Right. And he would have died anyway based off of what we
discovered. Right, and he's not a firefighter.
Yeah, he's not a firefighter.
I mean, his response was probably the correct one. Let's wait for the fire department to get here.
And let me keep the people from running into the fire who are trying to run into the fire. Where, you know, Eric and I think, would just say, be my guest. Go ahead in. The person who died was Braxton, JD's roommate. But wait.
Was it a roommate or a friend
or something?
Yeah, it was a third roommate. Brax and JD lived with someone else that maybe it was the guy's name was Alan, I think. And they were friends, or it was the next door neighbor. That's what it was. Next door neighbor of JD and Brax, because they were living in the apartment complex too, or something. But either way, they knew he was up there too, and they knew him well.
Now, this is the kind of thing where I do want to go back and watch the film, because I felt like until this moment, there really wasn't much of a hint of any of this in the other stories. So I'm not sure, like, are there bits there that we just missed?
Right.
That were setting things up?
I don't think so.
Or was this, like, completely the result of, didn't like things ending the way they did, or we needed to stretch this out, so we just kind of came up with something afterwards?
Well, I don't think so. I think you could argue and say that it's a do ex machina, but I think it wasn't. I think it was an unknown twist that no one would have predicted because there wasn't any hints. However, it was kind of a cool twist, because we're now learning that they were all brought there because of Alan, who was the guy that supposedly died in the fire, didn't die or somehow survived. And this is his fantasy to get revenge on all of them. And the thing is that the last one we forgot to mention was Melanie, who was supposed to go on a date with him that night. So had she gone on a date with him, he wouldn't have been in the house in the first place. I mean, the apartment building in the first place, and he wouldn't have died. So
she feels real bad about that.
Right. Especially
because she said no to the date.
Right. Because
if she had gone on the date with him, he wouldn't have been there and he wouldn't have died. So she feels better. So now we've tied all of them together to this one incident, except Melanie's bully, who's now just tagging along for the ride.
Yeah. Oh, no. Melanie's bully was partly responsible, too, because she was the one that said no guy would like you or something like that. So that's why she
chickened out on the date.
Because exactly.
Obviously, no man of worth anything could ever date a loser like her.
Right. Well, it's just kind of funny because both Gwen and Melanie's character were both, quote unquote, didn't think they could get guys, right? Because Gwen said, I turned down the marriage because I didn't think I was worthy to have love by somebody. But, you know, because there was a backstory where she didn't.
Gwen was a little different than Melanie, though.
Right. Yeah. But either way, it was kind of interesting. But you're right. So that was the big twist, which is, oh my God, this whole fantasy has nothing to do with them. It has to do with some third party person that wants revenge on all of them. And this is where I thought, okay, this is going to be like a slasher film. So, you know, someone did someone felt wronged from years ago, like, you know, Jason Voorhees' mother or someone like that, and now it's their turn to get revenge on everybody, and that was their fantasy.
But wait, that's not it either.
Well, wait a minute. Now, so as this is cross-cutting the storylines, somewhere in here, we get there's a direct link up between Patrick and his daddy, you know, and they've got a happy ending because Patrick has saved his daddy. And they come out of the jungle, and where are they? They're at the pavilion for where Brax and JD have been partying and have just vanquished their foes, which, unbeknownst to them, have come back as fantasy zombies with watery black eyes.
Right.
And, oh, yeah, Brax had a hand grenade, didn't he? And didn't Daddy die throwing himself on a hand grenade?
Right.
Anyway, so as they're walking, JD gets shot from behind by the water fantasy island zombies and dies. This fantasy isn't turning out the way they thought it would. Patrick's father dies in the ensuing battle. And so things are starting now to take a dark turn. The fantasies have going from what looked like you were going to get happy endings to everything going very, very wrong.
Right.
Wrong.
Wrong.
Correct.
Yes.
Okay.
That was good. Well played, Mike. Well played. So, so I thought this was kind of, even though it was a do kind of sort of do Ex Machina, it was also kind of a cool twist to turn it into a horror film, I felt. But dun dun dun, it kind of goes downhill after that.
There's more.
Right. There's more twists.
The last twist is so fucking bogus. Because it turns out that this isn't Alan's fantasy, the guy that supposedly survived the fire, even though they thought he died. No, it turns out that Melanie is lying about who she is.
The whole time!
And that she had that fantasy about her bully and then documented herself figuring out it was a real person to prove that she didn't really want to harm her in the first place, all so she could like play it off and live her real fantasy, which is that she did want to go on a date with that guy, but she holds all these other people responsible for them not falling in love and living happily ever after.
Because
what the fuck?
Because she had just met the guy. But he was the one.
Uh-huh.
Right,
and
right.
Because of them, she was just making herself pretty, so they were late for the date. And he stood her up. And she didn't know until later, it was because these people let him die.
Which, by the way, there's no fucking way she could have actually known any of that.
Oh, you know what? I'll grant her the roommates, I'll grant her the cop who got busted to permanent desk duty for not throwing his life away. How the hell does Maggie Q, who was just a random bystander who did not run into the building? Oh, wait, she's the one who started the fire.
Yeah.
She set the fire. That was it. Yeah. My bad. Okay. Right. So these are people responsible for the love of her life that she knew one day or whatever. Right. So it turns out that the school bully who has been talking about what a weird freaky chick this girl was absolutely correct. She was a weird freaky psychotic chick.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. They make jokes about it too as they're trying to run away from her. Like Brax and JD are talking about it, and it's like what? She just met the guy, and uh-huh. She actually thinks that she's going to be married in 30 years with 12 kids with this guy. And it's like, because, yeah, you know, I've had, and I'm sure everybody here has had a date. I had a great first date once, really great. And then the second date is like, ugh, that was, yeah, this isn't the person I thought. So she's already thinking that she met the guy for coffee for 1 hour, and now she's thinking, this is the greatest guy, and I'm going to be with him forever. And so she's mentally insane, completely gone.
Right. So if anyone out there is on the woke patrol, and you were planning on getting upset because one character's fantasy was that she regretted not getting married and having a kid, I hope you held your outrage until the ending, that we find out the reality is that the villain of the film was a girl who went crazy because a boy died before she had a second date with him.
Right.
That's where you want to get upset from.
Right. Technically, for all
chicks are crazy. That was the moral of the story.
You probably shouldn't get angry at all, but yeah, exactly. It's
this feels so tacked on.
The moral of the story is bitches be cray cray.
And this feels so tacked on, and like a such. Yeah. This feels to me like it was really somebody else who was the villain.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure it was. And I'll tell you why.
And it didn't work. And so we rewrote it to make her the villain, even though it really makes no sense. And it's not consistent with
anything. Well, let's explain why it. All right, that's good, Mike. But let's explain why, though, it doesn't make sense. And I'll tell you why. Because, and Eric, I think you were alluding to it earlier, which is when she's pressing the buttons to torture what she thinks is a hologram, the whole time she knew there was no hologram. She didn't have to talk to herself and go, oh, my God, what am I doing? Oh, my God, that's a real person. Because no one can hear her.
Well, no, she did, though, because she was filming the whole thing so that she could later prove what a good person she was.
Oh, all right. Then maybe you're right.
No, because we're still seeing her doing shit like that. You know, having conversations with the others, and she's doing stuff that I don't think it justifies it, and it's also making her very competent and sane for a crazy person.
Yeah.
Like, way too well thought out. As opposed to, well, I'll just tell her it was an accident and she'll believe me. No, she has the foresight to record what she's doing. So it turns into something overly complicated and overly convoluted. And I don't think that it works at all, making her the bad guy. And when you have your film hinging upon, you know, sort of like Knives Out, right? If Knives Out, the reveal of who the killer was, you went and got through that whole film and went, well, that's bullshit.
Right.
It's the film is built around that mystery. Now, this whole film is not built around the mystery because you're an hour into the film before you even realize the mystery's there. And you go, wait a minute, I thought we were wrapping shit up.
Right.
It's like, no, but wait, we're now a mystery film. Where the hell did this come from? All right, fine. And then it just take forever to wrap that up. And then they wrap it up with, and this character who is, you thought was the main character dating back to the very beginning, the pre-credit sequence when we kidnapped the bully, she's been the villain all along. I don't.
Right.
And it so here's, this is what holds me back from giving it a decent recommend as opposed to a meh recommend. If you buy this twist, then I think you'll enjoy the film a lot more than I did. And I still like the film more than I didn't. But man, this is we just did our year end. This gets a strong early entry for worst ending of the year.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is weird too, because the character, even though she was kind of shallow and all that, she wasn't really like a prick. And even when she was doing the torture and stuff, you know, she thought it was a fantasy, and then when she finds it's not a fantasy, you feel sympathy for her. It's like, oh my God, you know, and then she becomes this diabolical villain that seems intelligent versus earlier when she just seemed like a dummy airhead, and now they turned her into the diabolical villain, and it was like,
diabolical. I just think she was fucking psycho.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, diabolical in the sense that she has this, it was elaborate to get them all there and have them killed, even if it was the island that did it for her. But all in all, yeah, there was nothing that showed that she was going to be the villain, which is fine because that's a good twist. But turning her into the villain after what we saw prior to that twist, it didn't earn it, as I think you said, Eric.
Yeah, it was not good.
Yeah. I would have kind of rather have them. I was really hoping that, okay, they're all heroes, and now which one are going to get picked off and which one aren't, and will they, and who will get off the island. And it really didn't turn into that. It turned into a twisty thriller rather than a straight horror.
Mm-hmm.
But,
well, and even the horror part, like you said, those zombie things, not the best. I didn't like that particularly myself either.
Right, right.
And it does feel like that it was, it's like a studio note. Can we get some zombies in here? You know, like it was, again, tacked on to a pre-existing story, and they just sort of force it in, because it just doesn't feel, the last turn, right, once we find out that they're all tied into this, this fantasy of Gwen's, of Maggie Q's character, and they're tied back to the moment that she regrets, it feels like we're now in a different film.
Yeah.
Than the one we started off in. And that's where, and it's at that moment in the film where I think it just starts kind of falling apart, at least for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, right, right. See, for me, that twist I liked, because then I thought they were, like I said, it was going to be a jungle survival horror film where the six characters are fleeing this Allen guy and his minions. And so I was like, okay, I was ready for 35 minutes of jungle terror and who gets to the beach and gets the hell off the island. But it wasn't that. And then the second twist is where it lost me. What about you, Eric? When did you lose it? What was it? Which twist?
It started with the zombies. I wasn't crazy about the zombies.
Yeah, that was.
And like I said, I had problems with the whole cave sequence in general, but then particularly with the second twisty twist, I was just like, what?
And by the way, if someone wants to, as we kind of went through, if someone wants to explain all the little Easter eggs and things, explain why it makes sense, I'm fine with that. I'm willing. You can see that I missed stuff. I think I said earlier I kind of want to go back and see if there's things that I missed on the first time through. But I don't think the three of us are unintelligent viewers. The idea that we all three of us missed and think that this, the stuff that makes this all make sense, and that, like, I know we saw her picture looking at her boyfriend, who's clearly someone that she had died or broken up with earlier in the film, but this we feel this ending is not earned, would tell me that the problem is not in us as a viewer, it's with the execution of the film. And they didn't sell it well, or didn't set it up well enough, even if it does kind of in some weird ass way make some sense that you can explain it to us, then that's fine. But it still has to make sense to the people in the theater at the time that it happens. And it, based on survey says, 3 out of 3 people says it doesn't make any freaking sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's true. And it was unfortunate. And then, of course, even after all that twist, we still have Mr. Rourke's story.
But wait, and there's more.
Yeah, yeah. So, and that part kind of was blah too, because again, that's not the Mr. Rourke I knew when I was a kid. You know, he was a happy-go-lucky guy, and he felt that he did a good job because the people that leave the island have learned this lesson. But he had to learn his own lesson, which isn't the case in the show. Go on, Eric.
Well, and I don't think you necessarily need to hold that to the show, but I think the way they kind of handled his situation was weird. I didn't particularly like that whole story of his motivation.
Yeah,
but I'm just saying, I having not watched the show, I didn't have the show to compare it to, so that's not my problem with it. My problem is it's just silly, and really, he should have figured it out a long time ago.
Yeah, yeah. What about you, Mike? I mean, you kind of mentioned you didn't like the backstory and all that, but how did you like Mr. Rourke's ending, I guess?
I don't think I said I didn't like the backstory. I didn't like them having the backstory. I didn't like getting a backstory.
Well, that's what I meant.
Yeah. I mean, the backstory itself, I guess, was okay, and I kind of added a nice little tragedy to it. It doesn't still really explain, like, the island and stuff. But, yeah, it's... it was all right. If they're going to go that route, which, again, I kind of would prefer they didn't, but if they're going to go that route, I don't think it's the worst thing that they could have done. And by the way, I would say that, now he's our third Mr. Rourke. I guess I'm the only one that saw the reboot series, and Malcolm McDowell was definitely a darker Mr. Rourke than, Ricardo Montalban was, because, you know, he was Alex from Clockwork Orange, so, you know, and he's English, so he has to be a little bit more villainous than Ricardo Montalban. You got a lot of range here. He's basically a guy who's guilty over his wife's death and doesn't want to let his wife go. And, you know, we find a solution to that.
Right, right. And what about the tattoo? Anyone?
Right.
The last thing that happened in the movie, I really liked. I liked that last reveal. That was fun.
And I was kicking myself because they establish it as they're getting off the plane.
They do. It was thought of the whole time.
Because the frat bros, JD refers to what's his name again? Brock?
No. Brax.
He calls him T. I said, "Dude, that was a college thing only. I don't, you know, stop calling me that."
Mm-hmm.
Right,
and he
right.
makes and he says, "You know, what would your fantasy be?" He said, "Probably get rid of that terrible ink I got." You know, he's like, "Oh yeah, that was bad." You know, referring to his ink. And thankfully, you know, tattoos are such a commonplace thing, and especially if you're in the horror thing, you know, a lot of people have tattoos, so it's not weird to hear somebody call a tattoo ink. I don't even think twice about it.
Uh-huh.
I really should have. And of course, at the end, you know, now I'm starting to figure it out, because we got a problem, which is that everybody has a happy ending except for Brax, whose brother died.
Yeah.
So even the school bully, you know, who ruined her marriage, and, you know, part of the revenge was revealing that to her husband that she was having an affair, has learned to be a better person. Right.
Mm-hmm, right.
So, except for Michael Rooker, who still is dead at the bottom of a cliff. Nobody.
Poor bastard.
Nobody mentioned that again. Mr. Rourke makes him a deal that if he stays on to be his aide, right? Well, he never got a fantasy. So he could grant him his fantasy, and his fantasy would be to have his brother come back. But the problem
is he'd have to stay on the island.
If he leaves the island, his fantasy ends. Now, I had already figured out, because
to explain that, Mike, for folks who don't know what you're talking about, they go, "Hold on, I thought you just said that they had the big party." It really wasn't their fantasy, right? They were tricked into being there.
Well, so, one, it was JD's fantasy, and he just wanted his brother along.
Gotcha. Okay. Gotcha.
Right, and they make a point of that in the beginning, and that's why, again, if you had a fantasy, get rid of the ink, and so, and then he pulls open his shirt, like it's, and they talk about it. Somehow it mentions his ink, and he opens up his shirt, and he sees his tattoo is literally a tattoo of
the word tattoo.
And so, even though
I thought it was funny,
yes, and even though he is not a little person, he is a tiny Asian person.
He's on the shorter side.
He is definitely on the petite side.
Not full on midget, but still.
But he's definitely pocket sized. So he kind of works as a new tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
And I really kind of would like to see the two of them together as like a regular Mr. Work and tattoo thing. I'd be curious to see how they do that, because he can't get the Hervé Villechaize accent, which is the only thing that's going to be a little disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so that, and I thought that was kind of a nice nod to the fans and how they finish it up. And so yeah, so and that, so that's the film.
Right. Yeah, pretty much that's the film. Yeah, so it was interesting. I was glad that Sloan wasn't a red shirt, because I the whole film I just assumed she was going to be a red shirt, and so I thought that was a good twist that she wasn't. And I was surprised how many people didn't make it off the island, to be honest, out of the six main characters. But generally, I guess I was as satisfied as I could say I could based off of what came before. But yeah, it was all right. I will say I'm glad Chastity survived. She deserved to survive. She was the best. Good looking.
Phil got a Phil.
That has something to do with her as a person. Okay, yeah, that's a personality trait.
Well, you know, it's important.
For you, yes.
Yeah, all right, fair enough. I mean, maybe not for you. And
I don't
what
think
else?
It validates somebody's existence.
Well, nothing.
Well, some people's nothing, existence.
Nothing, to be honest, about, you know, but I think it's as good a reason as anything else. Now, plus she's the actress Charlotte McKinney, who plays her, is a famous YouTube Instagram model or something like that, I guess. So, yeah, that's pretty much it. Anything else anyone wanted to bring up for scenes we missed or anything?
I'm good.
Did anybody have all of the four stories before the twist?
Yes.
That turned out it was all one story. Yep. Did you have a preferred story? Is the one you liked more than the others? Is the one you didn't like maybe?
That's a fair
I thought
point.
The brothers were kind of lame.
Well, I liked that one because of all the hot chicks in bikinis. That was pretty good.
I was talking about the concept of the fantasy. It's pretty. Yeah, that's just kind of. There's no imagination going on there. That's kind of lame. I kind of liked the bully revenge, to be honest. And then the fact that she chickened out and saved her, I kind of like the fact that they, had that been the real story, she would have shown some growth as a, excuse me, yeah. as a person. I thought the one with the dad was the second most interesting. Maggie Q, I really like Maggie Q, and if anybody out there hasn't checked out the show Nikita, you should go check that out because she's awesome in it. But I thought her no, but I think you can get it on Netflix.
Yeah.
I thought her whole thing was a little weird. The original thing with the marriage proposal, I was like, really? Okay. I can kind of see that, but it's a little like you were talking about, Phil, for a modern movie. It's just like, that's a little, all right.
Although I got to be honest, I do think in real life, either side of the gender divide, letting go and losing the person that you really loved because you got cold feet could be a massive regret.
Right. That girl you dated in college, and it's like, why didn't I stay with her? You know, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, but I thought the reveal of why she refused the proposal was much more interesting. So.
Okay. Right. All right. For me, the four stories. Maggie Q's story was the more typical from the TV show, so that one felt nostalgic, even if it wasn't the best one. The bully revenge one was pretty solid, specifically the part when she was in the room and she was debating whether or not, oh my God, this is real. And so that kind of was real suspenseful, and I liked that a lot. The dude bro part one was pretty good at the beginning with the pool party and all that. But then once they started doing the other stuff, and it was and they had the twist that kind of went down. And then the soldier one, I didn't really like that one that much, but I did enjoy the fact that when the father finally was convinced that this was his son and his son was saying that you died here in Venezuela, because it was supposed to take place in Venezuela where they were, where the fantasy was happening. The father says, "Oh, then we got to get out of here, because I want to go home and, you know, watch my son grow," meaning you. And I thought that was really a cool thing. And then the son has this guilt, like, "Yeah, but Dad, if you leave, you were a hero because you threw yourself on a grenade and you saved all your fellow soldiers. But if you leave now, no one's going to save them. They're all going to die." And so he's having this debate in his head. And yet the father's like, "Yeah, but that's a fair point, son. But if I die, then I can't see, you know, be with my wife and see you grow and it's whatever." So I thought that was cool. So they all had their positives. So I guess the one that I liked the best, or the most interesting, specifically because I was going in for a horror film rather than anything else, was probably the bully one, because that was going places that seemed like it was going to be a horror film. You know, if I was going in for something else, I would have probably chose one of the other stories. But generally, they were all solid enough. It was really the second half of the film that kind of where it was lost. What about you, Mike?
Yeah, see, weirdly enough, the horror, the torture bully film might actually would have been one that I liked the least. No, actually not the least. I didn't like it as much as I probably would have, because it didn't really go dark, because it did feel like something out of a 70s TV series, and it only went as dark as a 70s TV show. Ooh, she got a little bit of an electric shock. Ooh, you dumped a bucket of water on her. Ooh, you've got this random plot device chasing you who just randomly appears and disappears according to the needs of the plot. I don't think it felt particularly well thought through. There were things in it I did like, you know, in terms of the interaction between Melanie and her bully, and this sort of, you know, the bully realizing, yeah, she really was a terrible person when she was younger. But also maybe the bully person realizes that maybe she was a little bit of a problem too. I did kind of like that relationship, but I just, in general, they could have gone darker with that. And I was a little disappointed in that. The Maggie Q story, it's the romantic story, and all right. I kind of said, again, predictability hurts a lot of these stories. And, well, you know, she's not going, "Oh, shit, I got everything I want. Thanks, Mr. Rourke. I'm going to leave now." You know she's going to have to give up her husband and her child for something. We just didn't know what it was for. Probably the soldier one's the one I liked the least, because at first I was expecting him to have done something, you know, terrible. So I was kind of expecting him to be a dick because he, you know, was stuck on desk duty. Or, you know, I was waiting for, and but then when it was clear that he was, you know, that it was not that and he wasn't a bad guy, I just, you know, it felt the most built upon there being a twist, but it was a twist that we all saw 1,000 times before. And so I just didn't find that really interesting very much at all. And, you know, it's just going to end one of two ways, which is either he causes his father to die or he saves his father in some way and it ends up being a happy ending. I guess the one I actually liked the most would have been the Dude Bros. And it was weird because I kind of like, because I agree with you, Eric, it's a lame fantasy, but you know that that's not what it's going to be. But I think I just liked the chemistry the actors had together. And I think they were just enjoyable to watch, even if it was a lame fantasy.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think that the soldier one was one I liked the least too, Mike. But again, it had some aspects that were interesting, especially that debate when they're traveling through this creek. If I had chose a story to do for myself, I think Maggie Q's is probably the most legit, because obviously if you regret screwing up, you know, in the love of your life is now with someone else and you never found someone else yourself, that's unfortunate. But, you know, Mr. Rourke said most of the people come here, they just do the sex story because that's the easiest. It's not really anything deep, but it's something, you know, like oh wow, I can you know, have sex with the hottest chicks and all this and that. And so that's probably the most fun in the sense. So the bros was probably the best story. If we look at it that way rather than how they presented it on the screen, I guess. So I don't know. It's pretty forward with pretty standard TV Fantasy Island stuff, I think.
Yeah.
Mike, I know you haven't seen the show for years, just as me, 40 years probably. But they were pretty much, you know, played homage to the original show, those four stories, you think, right?
Oh, yeah, I think very much. That first hour before they did the thing to tie them all together, which is the twist to make it a film and unify the stories. And conceptually, I don't have a problem with it. I don't know that it was executed very well. That's the thing that makes it a film. But up to that point, everything is very much like the TV series. You know, they all live out their fantasies. They find out, you know that, you know, there's a thing that happens that's not what they thought they wanted, or, you know, they get something different than what they did want, or they get what they wanted, it didn't work out as they wanted, whatever it is, and they learn their lesson and they go home, and you know, they, some of them go home with having gotten their fantasy, and some have gone home just happy with the life they already have. But that's how that kind of works, and that's right where that story was heading. So yeah, it very much feels like it. I don't know if I could watch the show now. I don't know if you've tried watching early 80s TV anytime recently.
The Incredible Hulk still rules.
I have not watched that since it was first on.
So does Knight Rider.
Yeah, I see. Like, I mean, it shows, you know, Knight Rider, A-Team, you know, is the whole go from one place to the other and right or wrong, and then move along and right or wrong somewhere else. And then the story that you did this week, you know, the other TV show with a wandering crime solver hero type will solve that same exact mystery about 3 weeks later, because we're all recycling the same plot devices. I mean, we're going, like, I think it's this weekend, I think Better Call Saul comes back. TV has gotten so much better.
Yes, yes, it has.
So much better. And those were so restrained because of ratings issues and budget issues and the need to tell the story in a 43-minute block, because you only had 45 minutes and two of those minutes were for credits and theme songs explaining the premise of the show.
I miss theme songs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, some Game of Thrones had a pretty good one, right? Even though it wasn't. It wasn't.
Right. You know, most words. Television shows don't bother this at this point.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, there's always some music, but like, you used to have like memorable themes and or lyrics to go along with your show. Like The Greatest American Hero, right?
Yeah.
Believe Cheers. It
or not. Right.
Cheers. Yeah. I mean, like Breaking Bad.
Oh, Friends. Friends, like, was a pretty good song, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Breaking Bad is like five notes, right? That's its theme.
Right.
Yeah. I think Better Call Saul expanded it to about six. It is what it is.
Right. Well, yeah, because I remember, like, Game of Thrones, that one was awesome. But then when Westworld came out, which was the next big show, that song was like, that kind of sucked. And then The Outsider, I'm watching now.
No, I like the Westworld theme. It took a while to grow on me, but I like
it.
It's good
music, but it's not catchy. It's not catchy.
It's good, but it does have really good visuals that go with it. But, yeah, it's not a great theme song. There was one that
Archie Bunker. That was they had some good ones. The opening.
Those were the days. Yes.
Yeah. That was good stuff. Three's Companies was pretty good.
Right.
Yeah, that was a good one.
And of course, the Love Boat.
Oh, Jefferson's
Love Boat.
Yeah, the Love Boat was really good. Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird actually. Now, Fantasy Island didn't really have.
Nah, it didn't. Did it?
I mean, it had the sweeping, you know, sort of instrumental thing that you could identify as the show theme.
But it had an iconic opening, right? Because Tatooine runs and he goes, the plane, and he cranks the bell and all
right,
that.
Right, but there wasn't a proper...
There wasn't a song, you're right, yeah.
I guess it was the plane approaching the island, right? That was the so-called, the quote-unquote opening credits.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Dallas had a pretty good opening song. Dallas, that was a good one. So,
my wife has often said how she had to watch Dallas when she was a little girl because her grandma would put on Dallas, and it turned out the only reason they were watching is because grandma liked the theme song. And then once the theme song was over, she could have changed the channel to watch something else that she would have actually liked to watch.
Right. I used to like Velcan Crest right after. That was a good show.
Never watched that one.
That was pretty solid. Yeah. But anyway, Knots Landing. I used to watch that one too. That was pretty good. Yeah, I like Michelle Phillips. She was awesome. Oh, and Nicolette Sheridan too. Yeah, that was good stuff. Damn, the good shows. Well, I actually used to watch TV shows.
Well,
yeah, I'm
content
with a lot of those.
TV is so much better now than it used to be. The theme songs suck, but the actual content of the shows is much better these days.
I'm perfectly willing to let them live well in my memory.
Right.
And not revisit it because I'm afraid as to what I would find.
Sure. And that's
the A-Team is still fun. Knight Rider is cheesy and stupid, but I still get amused by it.
Oh, but it was amazing, like the A-Team, how formulaic that show was.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, like, what time is it? It's 8:47. Whoop, time to have a montage.
Time for the montage of them fixing up the van? Yeah.
Or building a weapon out of farm implements or whatever.
Wait! We're half an hour in. It's time to knock out BA and put him on a plane.
What wasn't it like MacGyver too? Right, that was another one that was kind of formulaic.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, Charlie's Angels. That was good. Yeah. That had a good theme song.
Oh, so anyway, folks, in case you missed it, the theme for tonight is
we're old.
Right. Wonder Woman, Six Million Dollar Man.
Oh God!
Yeah.
And they're talking about they've been talking for years about bringing back $6 Million Man. Because someone went through the ledgers and they saw, holy shit, this thing made a lot of money back in the 1970s.
Yeah, but they're gonna have to retitle it though because these days $6 Million gets you a knee.
No, that's what I'd like. I'd like the $6 Million Man with like a person put together with what $6 Million might actually get you now.
No, it would just be.
He would just have a replaced leak.
So your father could.
He's got a broomstick for a leg.
my sister who just had her hip done, so she would qualify. She could be the $6 Million Woman.
Yeah,
it's like. Yeah, so it's gonna. Yeah. Well, it's like Dr. Evil, $1 million. Sorry, $1 million can't get you anything nowadays.
I'm on board with the $6 Million Man rebate as long as he's still
played by Lee Majors.
Sasquatch.
Right, Lee Majors.
You can't do that. Sasquatch died.
They should reboot in Search.
You know that Bigfoot was
that had a great
giant
song. Who was that?
Bigfoot was Andre the Giant in $6 Million Man.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Good luck finding another giant.
Oh, there's other big dudes out there.
Right.
But can they speak in rhyme?
Stop that rhyming now, I mean it. Anybody got a peanut?
Speaking of Andre the Giant, Tattoo and Andre the Giant were both Frenchmen, right from France. There you go.
Okay.
And Tattoo could have fit in his hand.
That's true. The biggest Frenchman and the smallest Frenchman. It's like, okay.
Oh, okay. I have to look. Now I'm curious. Is there a picture of Hervé Villechaize and Andre the Giant together?
Why would there be?
Why wouldn't there be? They were alive at the same time.
Yeah, but this was before the internet. They might not have known they existed.
No, there's Hervé Villechaize with Roger Moore. He's not quite Andre the Giant.
No, he's not. Although, if there's a picture of him in Jaws, that might be close enough. Jaws is a pretty big dude.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that guy was awesome.
Yeah. What was the actor's name? Was it like Richard?
Richard Kyle yeah. or Kiel.
It had a K.
Yeah, Kiel. Kiel, that's it.
K-I-E-L. Yeah, no, I don't. He's not there. Oh, well. It was worth a shot. I'm getting pictures of the two of them, but just not the two of them together.
Oh, well.
Just the pictures of a lot of pictures of Andre the Giant standing next to normal sized people, making them look ridiculously tiny.
He was a large man.
Yeah, there's him standing next to Muhammad Ali, making him look tiny.
Yeah, there's a reason they called him Andre the Giant.
I'd like to hear that story.
It was an earned nickname. Yes.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yes, it was. Yes, he was a giant, and Andre is a French name. So there you go.
By the way, there's a documentary about Andre the Giant on HBO. Yes, it's worth really watching.
Good. I heard it's really good. I haven't watched it. You have, so that's I recommend it, Eric.
Absolutely.
All right. Yeah.
I think we've sort of lost the plot of the of
very
the
much like Fantasy Island, the movie.
Yeah, there we go.
well, you know,
now is where Abe comes in and says, "It was me all along."
Right. Chrissy's computer finally worked, and she'll join us in 2 minutes.
Okay. So I'm scrolling through, just because, Andre the Giant, Hervé Villechaize, and here's a picture of Michael J. Fox and Nancy Reagan. Not even close.
What?
Michael
Google
J. Fox.
Fail.
Yeah, that's...
All right, let's push on, shall we?
Yeah. So we've been recording for about an hour and 56 minutes. So I don't know if we want to really go into any news or what we've been watching, but I guess if anybody wants to throw anything out, I guess they could. Anybody want to throw anything out? Or
I watched Lock and Key based on the Joe Hill comic book series. It's a
good thing about it.
It's a 10 episode series, or I think it's 10 episodes on Netflix, and it is very mediocre. It's an interesting
general review I've heard of it is go read the comic.
Yeah, I heard the comic is a lot better. It is not, given that Joe Hill / son of Stephen King, who has written horror stories, it is not very horror-y. It does not have if I describe the premise to you, you know, oh, there's a family, their father watched their father get murdered, and it would sound very horror-y, but it's really not. It's very fantasy like sort of like an agnostic Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe about these kids living at home, you know, and having these adventures for their wacky keys. And because mom is an adult, she can't ever remember seeing anything magical, so she never knows what's going on. It just feels like it's really aimed more at a younger audience than me, because tonight's episode is called We're Old. and I'm not going to say it's bad. I'm just not going to say it's particularly good either. It's not something that they can't tweak in the second season, if there is one, and amp up, because I think the actors are fine. The premise is fine. But very meh series.
Yeah, that's what I've heard too. Yep. All right. Anything else? Anybody else want to bring up, or?
Not anymore, because that's something I watched. It's something we're going to do an episode on next week, so I won't mention it. But I've been rewatching the series The Good Place, which really isn't dark, but it's an awesome show. So.
Well, it has its moments.
What station?
It has some dark moments, I suppose.
What station?
I don't know. I don't watch things when
and you know
TV.
Why Phil asked that question?
Because I
because he's
like
old.
That
he's, right. He's asking for a station.
Oh my God, that's a good point, Mike. That's a really good point.
I honestly don't know what network produced The Good Place. I watched
NBC.
It on Netflix.
NBC.
Okay. All right. So I have
the first three seasons are on Netflix. They just wrapped up season four, which is the final season. I've not seen any of season four yet. But I tried to get Dan into it because he's actually like studied a bunch of philosophy, which is something this show delves into in quite a humorous fashion. So I figured he'd groove on it, and I kind of got him into it, and then just kept on watching once he left. So I'm back in the middle of season two,
and it's very, it's for a sitcom. You know, if I were to describe the finale to you, it would seem really bizarre, but it's very, very fitting and surprisingly deep and comforting in some ways as a way to end the series, as I could have imagined. It's one of the most fitting endings for a show I've ever seen.
Cool. Look forward to seeing it.
It is, however, not especially funny.
Okay.
Whereas the other rest of the show is really has some wonderful moments in it.
Season 2, episode 2, it makes me laugh harder than a lot of other things I've seen. It's the trolley problem. Yeah,
the trolley problem. Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah. So you should check it out, Phil.
All right, very well. Anything else, anybody? Anyone? All right. I guess we can give up our final thoughts on this film here, Fantasy Island. So, Eric, why don't you start?
I thought this movie was okay. It had some weak points. It had some strong points. Overall, I'm not going to urge anybody to rush out and see it in the theater. But you might want to rent it or stream it later on down the road.
All right, very good. Mike?
Yeah, if you're a fan of the old series, and that's probably who's interested in a new version, it's probably not a huge Venn diagram overlap there. I might recommend giving it a shot. I don't think I would say you have to rush out to see it in theaters. I think this would be perfectly fine and will play perfectly fine on home video at some point. So content yourself with that. I think you'll be okay. It didn't bowl me over. I don't think there's an R-rated version coming or an unrated version. And I think, you know, it's at the very least the first hour or so is really good. And then it's up to you to see whether or not the twist worked in the end. And it didn't work for me. It may work for you. And I think that'll a lot of your enjoyment will hinge on that.
All right, very weird. For me, generally I had a fun time with it, even with the flaws, and we did beat up the film a little bit. I still had a real fun time with the film, and the entire time I was at the theater, even though there were some disappointments, and the third act dragged just a little. All in all, I had a smile on my face, so it was nothing that I regretted watching by any means. So I would recommend it in that sense, as a great film. Obviously, it has some issues and as a reason why some critics don't like it. But, as I mentioned, Barrett, one of our Facebook members, and listeners to the podcast said that he thought it was a big thumbs up for him. So, you know, it depends on, you know, what you're looking for. So, I wouldn't poo-poo it, but, just, you know, keep your expectations in check. All right, so that was Fantasy Island, new Blumhouse film, 2020, starring a number of folk, Maggie Q and Michael Pena and whatnot. The film is directed by Jeff Wadlow again, a regular Blumhouse director, and with a $7 million budget, it's already made a profit. It'll be curious to see how much it makes its second week, which comes out in a moment. Today's February 20th, so we have the weekend coming up in 2 days, and it'll be curious to see if it gets the 50% drop or if it literally just drops off the face of the earth. But either way, it'll be on VOD, and it'll probably make a lot of money there because I'm sure it'll be promoted big, and folks can check it out then if they don't get it at the theater. So I guess with all that stated, I guess we can wrap it up. So Eric, why don't you lead us out?
All right, thanks for tuning in and listening to us talk about Fantasy Island. Come back next week, we'll have another topic.
Yeah, breakfast at Tiffany's and bottles of bubbles, girls with tattoos who like getting in trouble. Lashes and diamonds, ATM machines. Buy myself all of my favorite things. Been through some bad shit, I should be a savage. Who would've thought it turned me to a savage? Rather be tied up with claws and not strings. Write my own checks like I write what I sing, yeah. You like my hair? Gee, thanks, just drop it. I see it, I like it, I want it. Put it in the bag, yeah. When you see the max, they stack the light.